Here at Cardinal News, we believe facts matter, and so does your support. As an independent, nonprofit newsroom, we're committed to bringing you in-depth, fact-based reporting about Southwest and Southside Virginia. It's the kind of reporting you won't find anywhere else. If our stories have informed, inspired, or even surprised you this year, consider supporting our work. Every contribution helps keep this kind of local news strong. You can give today at cardinalnews.org/membership. Hello and welcome to the Cardinal News of Virginia, a podcast from Cardinal News. We're a nonprofit, independent newsroom serving Southwest and Southside Virginia at cardinalnews.org. I'm Lisa Rowan, filling in for Dutchy Jesse. The Cardinal podcast is sponsored by Muneris, serving communities with expert group benefits and Medicare solutions. Today, we are joined by our reporter, Elizabeth Beyer, who covers politics for Cardinal News. She is our Bureau of One in Richmond. And with the General Assembly session coming up in January and a new governor kicking off her term, we thought it would be a good time to check in with Beth and find out what she's expecting from Virginia politics this winter. Beth, thanks for being here.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
So this January, we've got Abigail Spanberger, a Democrat, coming in as governor, and the Democrats are holding the majority in both the House of Delegates and in the Senate. So tell me about how that majority could impact what's happening in General Assembly this upcoming session, particularly around energy costs and data centers, because these are big topics, especially in Southwest Virginia.
Right. So I'm going to shout out our energy and business reporter, Matt Bussey, real quick, because he is the true he's the true expert on this. I am definitely not, well, on energy and data centers anyway. I am not the true expert on energy prices and data centers, but I will do my best to answer the question anyway. So we do have a Democratic executive branch coming into office in 2026. We've got a pretty wide Democratic majority as well that is coming into the House of Delegates. I think they have 63 or 64 seats. I'm blanking on the exact number. I know it's around that. But it's a wide margin that they haven't seen for, I think, about like 40 years. So it's like pretty historic. You know, a lot of what we heard from the Democrats leading up to the November election that provided them with the Democratic trifecta that they have, the, you know, control over the Senate, the state Senate, the House of Delegates, and the executive branch. A lot of what we heard from them leading up to the elections was kind of like this refrain about affordability and how folks are struggling right now, struggling to make ends meet, struggling to, you know, pay for groceries, pay for gas, pay for their electric bills, pay for housing. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of emphasis on affordability as we, or at least I hope we do. I hope, you know, all of that, you know, campaigning wasn't just hot air, but, you know, politicians.
Yeah, I think the timing of the government shutdown at the federal level back in the fall really congealed with the talk about Virginia politics in terms of affordability, because you have such a large workforce in the state that works for the federal government. So, you know, thinking about how finances were going for those families affected by the federal shutdown, it sort of has ripple effects down to the whole state. And really, even though that's not our part of the state for Cardinal News, it has an impact on what discussions are like in Richmond, right? So you have affordability for everyone, and then you layer a shutdown on top of it, and it really brings it to top of mind, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, Virginia is home to hundreds of thousands of, you know, federal employees and federal contractors that were negatively impacted by the shutdown. And, you know, those voters turned out in this election.
Yeah.
And we're gonna see what happens in the 2026 session because of it. So
one of the things that's coming up for the General Assembly this winter is constitutional amendments. There are two coming up for a second required vote, maybe three coming up for a second required vote. So tell us about those and four. Well, the fourth one is redistricting.
Yes.
That's the new one. So we'll talk about the three that are coming up for that second vote that we knew about sort of before the fall that were going to come up and what they mean for the process of constitutional amendments.
Yeah, so we've got abortion is the probably like the one that you've heard the most about. And what the Democrats in the General Assembly are looking to do is to, codify in the Virginia Constitution the current level of access to abortion health care in Virginia. We hear a lot of, I think on one side of the aisle, Republicans like to say, well, you know, it allows for abortion up to the day of birth. I don't know if that's accurate. And Democrats on the other side say, you know, since Roe v. Wade fell after the Dobbs decision, you know, every state is trying to like make an effort to, you know, keep that access to that reproductive health care for their constituents, or at least Democrats in every state are trying to do that. I'm sure there's like some like moderate Republicans here and there that are also like open to access to abortion, but you know, those folks seem to be few and far between these days. We've got codifying in the Virginia Constitution same-sex marriage. So you heard a lot after the Dobbs decision affected the ability to access reproductive health care on a nationwide scale. Folks were wondering if like Obergefell would be next. So in order to protect folks' right to, you know, marry same-sex partners, the Virginia House of Delegates and the Senate, the General Assembly, have decided to put forth a constitutional amendment that would enshrine, you know, that right in the state constitution. And the last one is
it's restoration of rights.
Yeah, thank you. It's like on the tip of my tongue. I was going to get there. I promise. Is restoration of rights for formerly incarcerated folks. So what that would do is it would restore voting rights to people pretty much like as soon as they get out of jail after they serve time and paid restitution for their felonies. And I'm not sure about the political breakdown of that as far as like whether or not, you know, Republicans support it or don't support it. That's something I need to look into. I should have looked into before we sat down.
So the three of these have been voted on once in the General Assembly. So they move forward for a second vote during this session, correct?
Right. So the constitutional amendment process in Virginia is the constitutional amendment will need to get voted on by the General Assembly and passed by the General Assembly once. And then there needs to be an intervening election. So we just had that in November. And then the new class of assembly members will need to come in and vote on it again and pass it again. And then once that second passage happens, if it does happen, then, you know, if it isn't passed by the General Assembly a second time, then obviously it dies. But if it's passed by the General Assembly a second time, then it will go to the voters in a referendum. And then, you know, the voters will vote on it on an election day. Not sure if it will be, you know, a special election day or if it's going to be like the primary election day. And if, you know, voters approve it, then it becomes constitutional amendment.
Got it. Okay. So this has been sort of in the works for a while, but it has a bit of a longer process to make sure that it's not like quick sent through General Assembly super fast. It's this process of, you know, hey, everybody, let's make sure we know what we're doing and we're deciding what to do. And then the voters ultimately get to decide before this gets enshrined in the Constitution, this kind of thing.
Right. I think it's interesting to mention that like the governor doesn't have any say in this process either. So like the governor can't like veto it.
Interesting.
Or like sign it. Yeah.
Okay. So that is interesting considering the other constitutional amendment that is now a viable topic that we're talking about is congressional redistricting. This has come up in Texas and California. Now it's being debated in Virginia. How did our state get involved in this broader discussion about redistricting at the congressional level at all?
So what Democrats have said, and this was basically their initiative when they decided to call a special session in late October, and bring everybody back for about a week to, you know, debate basically just like this sole issue. So Democrats have said that the North Carolina decision to redistrict was really like the tipping point for them. You know, Texas had, as you mentioned, redistricted. And I think a couple of other states have, as like Republican-led states have as well. And then following a suggestion by Republican President Donald Trump, who kind of like poked and prodded the certain states to, you know, redistrict to create more seats for Republicans ahead of the 2026 midterm. So California, a Democratic-controlled state, they also just passed their redistricting referendum, which was a referendum that went to the vote. So that was kind of like to counteract Texas. So Democrats, you know, started the redistricting effort in California after Texas started the redistricting effort. And then Virginia started their redistricting effort after North Carolina, their redistricting effort. So I'm babbling a little bit. I apologize.
This is like a one for one, like the Republicans are going to try to redistrict. The Democrats are going to try to redistrict and sort of trying to balance that out among the states, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And Democrats, when they wrote this redistricting constitutional amendment, which they didn't have the wording for, like when they called the special session, and we actually had to wait a couple of days for the actual bill text, which was irritating to me, but whatever. So yeah, Democrats like put this trigger language in the bill. And that said, basically that like this redistricting constitutional amendment can only, and it has like an expiration date. It can only take place between, 2025 and 2030. And, you know, we can only do it if another state redistricts outside of the regular like 10-year census period. You know, for reasons other than, you know, like for the reason that it's happening right now, basically. So there's that trigger language in there, which basically makes this like a one and done constitutional amendment. So it's not like it's something that could be, you know, repeated. I don't know. That's kind of interesting. Like how would you create a constitutional amendment with like, that is, you know, only affected like once?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Well, you'll read more about that on Cardinal News when we figure it out as we go along.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah. But this is coming back for a second vote this session. And then could it appear on the same ballot as the other constitutional amendments if they reach that referendum point?
So we don't know. And that was discussion during like the 1 week special session where, you know, the first vote for the constitution, the redistricting constitutional amendment was passed. You know, no one could really say. And, you know, Democrats have also said like, well, maybe we won't even have to do this if like this, you know, U.S. Supreme Court like strikes down some of the Republican states that have chose to redistrict. So it's kind of like this could happen. We have it in our, Democrats are saying this, we have it in our back pocket in case it does happen. Mm. I don't know. It's all kind of strange to me. And it's all very frustrating. But anyway, so it was passed the first time on a party line vote in the Senate, and the House of Delegates doesn't need to go to the governor because it's a constitutional amendment. The intervening election, and there's going to be a lot of litigation about this. There's already like a couple of lawsuits. I think there's one ongoing in Tazewell, and I think that that hearing date is coming up. And one of the like legal arguments that Republicans are making against, you know, this redistricting effort is that Democrats like proposed it and passed it in the middle of an election because we have 45 days of early voting. So the election was essentially already underway. The redistricting effort was brought up. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But anyway, as I said before, it was passed on party line votes. And then the intervening election was the November election that we just had. And then it's, you know, when we go into the General Assembly session for 2026, that's going to be the second time it's brought up on the General Assembly floor, and we'll see if it passes again.
And I will note that we are recording this episode in very early December, so things are still sort of coming together in terms of this and other items that are going to come up for the General Assembly. One of those things that we are waiting for in December is the governor's budget that will present for consideration by the General Assembly. Of course, this is one of those odd sort of years where you're switching administrations for governor. So Governor Youngkin will propose his budget, and then the General Assembly will debate it and make changes to it while a different governor is in office. We talked a little bit before about, you know, challenges at the federal level. Do we know yet how changes to federal funding and those cuts will impact how lawmakers are thinking about our state budget? Or is it too early to tell at this point?
I think for some of those federal cuts, it's still a little too early to tell. For issues like the Affordable Care Act, tax credits, enhanced tax credits that are, you know, expiring at the end of this month, December, there has been talk amongst Democrats about, you know, funding those expired tax credits on the state level. And that's going to be like a few hundred million dollars annually, I believe. But, you know, there was some talk and some concern about like some other federal programs and how, you know, cuts to funding are going to affect those and whether or not the state is going to have to kind of like, you know, pick up the tab for that. But we don't really, I don't know, we won't really know until those budget proposals come out, you know,
okay.
Until, you know, the governor's budget proposal comes out and the General Assembly has the opportunity to, you know, debate it and put their own budget proposals together to be brought to the floor.
Mm. One of the other things that we're looking to that's going to be sort of new this General Assembly session is new lawmakers. We have several that have been elected from Southwest and Southside Virginia getting ready for their first session. What can you tell us about these new faces and where their priorities might lie in their first term?
Yeah, so we've got in Southwest and Southside Virginia, we've got a new Democrat, Lily Franklin. She defeated incumbent Republican delegate Chris Obenshain. In the 41st district, I think that's like the Blacksburg area, mostly with like some outlying, like the Montgomery County. And then we've got Mitchell Cornett, who's a Republican. He was elected to Delegate Jen Arnold's seat, who was a Republican. So no, like, you know, party shakeup there. And Madison Whittle, he is a longtime Republican city council member in Danville, and he was elected to Delegate Danny Marshall's seat, who is also a Republican, so no party shakeup there. I don't know what they're going to put forth. I should probably, you know, reach out to them to see about their, you know, legislative priorities, but I am interested to see, like, what they do in their first year. They obviously, their terms are two terms, so they'll have the first year, and they need to act fast in order to put their legislative priorities out there and really, like, you know, put a stamp on their district. But yeah, I'm really interested to see like what their plans are for their first year, how they're going to present those legislative priorities and where those priorities lie, and, you know, how they follow through with their second year in their first term. So, you know, after we hang up with this or after we get off screen, I'm probably going to email them and say, hey guys, let's talk.
Yeah, it's with a two-year term, you have to act fast because all of a sudden it's going to be time for a re-election campaign. And it's, you know, I know as I've been looking through some things related to education, you know, different lobbying organizations are still putting together their legislative agenda for 2026. So I want to mention that to our audience, not to put it on Beth to make it look like she is not doing her job. It's, you know, this is a very fluctuating time right now. And it's always a little weird being a reporter in between Thanksgiving and Christmas because some people are working, some are not. The pace slows down a little bit until that governor's budget comes out. And then it's to the wall, you know. I want to ask you a little bit about what it's like to cover the General Assembly. So the session convenes on January 14th for 60 days, and it's really nonstop. Like, there are hearings that begin at, I think, 7:30 in the morning, and sometimes you're going until late at night. There are multiple things happening at once. You really, being our only reporter in Richmond, like, how do you divvy up your time and think about your workload during that time so that you're getting what you need to serve the readers of Southwest and Southside of Virginia, and you're not also losing your mind every day?
Well, I clone myself.
Two baths, two times the fun.
I'm just kidding, obviously. But yeah, I don't know. I drink a lot of coffee. You know, I take a look at the legislative agenda each day when I wake up, and you know, send a message to Dwayne and Megan. Hey, guys, what are we interested in today? Here's a list of all of the things that, you know, our readership, like we've written about in the past, and that our lawmakers are, you know, working on today. This person will be discussing this bill in this committee today. This issue will be voted on the floor supposedly around this time. You know, this other topic is going to be discussed in this other committee, and that's probably going to be happening at the same time as this other topic that's going to be discussed in another committee. So what should we do? What do we want to focus on? And Dwayne and Megan have been invaluable in helping me to kind of like plan out my day-to-day, but it is, and I'm hoping we can strategize a little bit more. It is kind of like a day-to-day. How are we going to tackle this?
Yeah. Constant triaging. Yeah. Megan Schnabel is our managing editor, and audience, you probably know, Dwayne Yancey, who somehow like watches a whole bunch of General Assembly, meetings, live streams, and like covers some of that stuff. And then also has time to write columns. And like, I don't know. I think he truly is cloned. If you check through his house, you might find a second Dwayne. But it is, you know, one of the great things for me being not in Richmond is that I can go online and watch a lot of these hearings and votes as they take place through a live stream system that, thank goodness to whoever sets it up and maintains it, because it is so helpful to be able to see things without having to be there. I will say also that Beth has a lovely cubicle in the General Assembly building. There's a media office where all of the press members, you know, go and, you know, leave all of their coffee cups throughout the day. And so Beth is pretty nonstop. I can vouch for that. And the rest of us get a little nonstop too, because there are always topics that come up for education or technology or business or, you know, other things that we cover. So it is a team effort, but it is definitely Beth at the front of the pack helping us out with all of that. Beth, how can readers reach you if they want to know more about what you're working on or send you a hot tip?
Yeah, they can reach me via email. It's Elizabeth@cardinalnews.org, and that's Elizabeth with a Z.
Excellent. And we'll be keeping in touch as the session goes on. It is always tough to schedule podcast recordings when things are changing rapidly. So we do our best, but, you know, keep an eye on the website for all of the up-to-date information. And Beth, thanks for being here with us today.
Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate you.
And thank you for listening to the Cardinal News of Virginia. Thanks to our sponsor, Muneris, and to Sean Eddy of Eddy Alexander for production support. And as always, thank you to Cardinal News' own Zach Shelton. Read all of our paywall-free local news coverage at cardinalnews.org. I'm Lisa Rowan. Take care now.